This is West Virginia Morning. I'm Beth Voorhees. It's 7:33. Well, it's never really easy to report on ourselves here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting, but we do this morning because it's a red letter day here. We have a new website with a new web address. Gone is the long and complicated wvpubcast.org. And here comes simply wvpublic.org. Joining us this morning to talk about this new effort is Scott Finn, the executive director of West Virginia Public Broadcasting. Good morning and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Beth.
So why is a new website so important to bring you in on a Monday morning?
Well,
early.
Yeah, exactly. Well, a new website's important because the web is the third channel for us now. We've for a long time been radio and television, West Virginia PBS. And if anyone has a daughter or a granddaughter like my daughter will know that they don't use media like we do. She rarely watches traditional TV. If she wants something, she goes to the internet, she finds it, and she brings it back. And our new website, wvpublic.org, allows you to do that.
Storytelling on the web is different than it is on radio and television. And many of us here at West Virginia Public Broadcasting have been going through training to figure out the best way to present a story on the web. It really is different than on radio or TV.
That's right. And on the web, you can make use of all the different mediums. You can have photographs, you can have video, you can have audio, and also text. And we're really good at that here. And our new website really helps to showcase that. If you go on our website right now, you'll see a whole bunch of photos that Glynis Board took from Ogilvy Fest this weekend, which is a great festival up in Wheeling. Mm-hmm. And that's just one example of what we can do on this new website.
We like to say in radio, we can take you there. We can take our microphones and we can go to Ogilvy Fest and we can present the sounds and immerse you in those sounds. But now you can go to the web and see what you were hearing at Ogilvy Fest. So how are we paying for this, Scott?
It is part of our NPR dues. And so there's no additional cost to this. NPR has set up a whole division to help stations to better present things on the web. And that's to the benefit of both us and our audience and also to NPR, because our dues are what help keep NPR on the air too.
Mm-hmm. All right. It's still in its infant stage. We'll warn our listeners, it's still in its baby stage.
There might be a few glitches here and there, and we expect that. If you encounter them, there's a form at the bottom of the page to fill out, or you can always go to our email, which is feedback@wvpublic.org. We're hoping that our audience will help us test this, fix the mistakes, and make it an even better experience.
And that's at wvpublic.org. Scott Finn, Executive Director of the West Virginia Public Broadcasting, thank you so much.
Thank you, Beth.
And this is West Virginia Morning. It's 7:36. Some rain this morning, possibly some isolated thunderstorms, and windy with gusts of up to 35 miles per hour. But becoming mostly sunny this afternoon with temperatures in the 60s. Mostly clear and cooler tonight with overnight lows in the 40s to around 50 degrees. Probably start out with some dense fog Tuesday morning, becoming sunny with temperatures in the 60s tomorrow.
Support provided by the Charleston Ballet, presenting On the Appalachian Trail, October 18th and 19th at the Civic Center Theater. Details at thecharlestonballet.com. And support for NPR comes from HBO, launching its fall documentary series with Valentine Road, about a classroom murder that divides a community. HBO, October 7th at 9 p.m.
Storytelling is an old art form in Appalachia. One West Virginia storyteller's newest project, a CD of music and stories entitled The Mountain Came Alive, attempts to modernize this tradition by addressing today's concerns. Cecilia Mason talks with Adam Booth.
There was once a mountain.
My name is Adam Booth, and I am a storyteller.
It was an Appalachian mountain, and it was an old mountain. But it was filled with rhythms that rose up from the earth and reached toward the sky. The wind blew around this mountain and water ran down its sides.
I started telling tall tales, original tall tales. I started in storytelling as a competitive storyteller through the West Virginia Liars competition. But before that, I had learned a lot of family stories from older storytellers in my family. So now I tell family stories, original tall tales, and of late, I've been picking up some traditional Appalachian stories and ballads, and also trying to create new Appalachian stories.
Now, you have this CD out, and The Mountain Came Alive has what on it?
The Mountain Came Alive is a series of stories and music that I wrote that collectively, through the course of 20 tracks on the CD, tells one big story. So it's what I'm calling contemporary Appalachian storytelling, contemporary Appalachian music, but it all relies upon Appalachian roots music and traditional Appalachian storytelling, just updated to present a very current idea.
Everybody ready?
I wanted to tell a story about Appalachia and events in Appalachia that are happening right now. As I have been telling stories around the country, particularly in Appalachia, one of the themes that comes up with people that I'm working with is mountaintop mining and environmental issues in Appalachia, also hydraulic fracturing. And there's been a lot of awareness and push to get people to know more about this. And one thing I saw an absence of was that few people were targeting young people with these issues. And so I wanted to create an album that presented these ideas to young people in a very safe way, because I think story is a place where you can do that.
I'm looking on the back of your CD, the cover of it, and it says A Year in the Life of a Mountain in Stories and Songs. So I assume that you take people through some mountain's life.
Yes, the theme of the CD is that it's the last year in the life of an Appalachian mountain that's going to be strip mined. And as the story progresses, you find more and more about that. That's not initially presented. It starts in the winter. It goes from winter, spring, summer to the autumn. And it takes you through all of the events that happen within the communities on the mountain, not just the communities of people, but also the plants that live there, the animals, the water, the water cycle, the fungi that live there, and tries to show that all of these things are very closely related to a sense of place, which is what I believe is one of the strongest aspects of Appalachia, that we're really related to a sense of place and to place. And forever and ever, that place has been the mountains. And so that's what happens in this story. It's a year of talking about this mountain community, and well, the mountain communities, in the face of this big looming question: what's going to happen when the mountain's gone?
This was an old mountain, an old Appalachian mountain that was filled with rhythms that rose up from the earth and reached toward the sky. The wind blew around the mountain and water ran down its sides, and seasons of the year brought forth all kinds of plants. The mountain came alive.
I travel all over Appalachia and specifically West Virginia for my storytelling career. And so I visited a lot of little communities. I've heard from a lot of people in those communities who are facing these environmental issues and also trying to figure out who their identity is today. What is a small Appalachian community in 2013? We hear a lot of what it was in the 19-teens and the 1950s and even the late 1880s and 1890s. But there's a big void, I feel, out there with people trying to figure out who we are today.
So have you concluded anything about who we are today?
I know that a lot of who we are today is very much who we have been for a long time. You know, Appalachians are fiercely independent people, and yet they are openly reliant upon neighbors and their own community. We have a stubbornness in our tradition of outsiders, sometimes for the good, sometimes for the bad. You know, there's a lot of hard work. There's a lot of endurance through incredible hardship and poverty. But there's also an incredible richness of story
a richness of tradition, heritage, craft, all kinds of folklore. And I'm seeing now, in people around my age, that there is an embrace of some of those traditional elements that maybe the generation before us wanted to distance themselves from. And with the youngest generation now, I'm not quite sure who that community is. And that's part of the reason I created this. Because in telling stories, I found that there were a lot of young folks who didn't quite know what Appalachia was or who they were. And so I tried to put a lot of folk elements into this and also a lot of contemporary elements into it. There's a song on here called Clearest Creek. Water that's sweeter than a honeysuckle vine, colder than frost in midwinter, lovelier than lavender, fresher than the pine, surliest sign of the spring, and it was the clearest creek. The story that that song tells and the place that it fits into the overarching story is really influenced by some people I met at Cayford Mountain, some relatives of Larry Gibson's, who took me to see some of the mountaintop mining sites in the distance, and they told me stories about how there used to be these beautiful, clear, very pure creeks that ran down the mountains that aren't there anymore. And so I tried to encapsulate that memory and that story into a 3-minute song that, within the context of the larger piece, illuminates an area of Appalachia, a very real issue, but also something that we're all reliant upon, the water cycle.
Some people are reliant on the coal cycle, too, the mining of it. So is there balance in your CD at all with that reality?
You're exactly right. And this is a question that a number of people have asked me about this disc. And here's the way I'm answering it. My goal with this isn't to say X is good, Y is bad. My goal is to say, here is a place, here are many different kinds of people, and here are many histories and heritages and traditions in the face of something that could change all of that. And I'm hoping that I've done it in such a way that it makes the listener want to go out and find out more. That way they can make their own decisions as to whether these are good things or bad things.
Adam Booth, thanks for talking with me.
Thank you so much.
Producer Glennis Board was at the annual Fall Festival in Wheeling. She visited artisans, events, and displays at Oglesby Fest, all the while gathering sound to bring us this audio postcard.
My name is Chris Villamagna, and I'm at Oglesby Fest 2013. It's great. I'm at the artist market, which is my favorite part of the festival. There's a lot of things to take part in, but the artist market is my favorite. I enjoy looking at all the work and helping out the artists and just enjoying the coming of fall, which this festival kind of makes me feel good about.
My name is Denise Riley. That's my husband, Brian Riley, and my son, Justin Riley. Our business is B. Riley Blacksmith. The forge is an antique rivet forge that we picked up at a farm auction. He turns a crank that turns a fan, which puts air into the fire, and that heats the metal up to about 2,000 degrees. Once the metal is red hot to a red to a yellow hot, it's soft and pliable like a Play-Doh.
Chocolate banana muffins. Only giving $5 to start them. Five goodbye, 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 five goodbye. $2 where? Two, three, four, five, six, your turn. Six, seven, eight, 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 nine. Nine, 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 nine call it $8, parts five.
My name is Gary Davis. I live in Jerusalem, Ohio, and I make brooms. Well, this is a broom machine that I acquired from some relatives of a man by the name of Gladman, Wilbur Gladman. And this is what he did for a living. He made brooms, raised chickens, sold eggs, and generally farmed. He had no family, and he did this like for his whole entire life. When I put broom corn in here and turn the treadle, it makes the machine work. The whole idea of putting broom corn in here is that you get it on evenly, so that when you finish the broom looks symmetrical. So it's not got a big bump of broom corn over on one side and on the other side it doesn't. And that's essentially what the machine does. It wraps the wire tight on the broom corn so that when you hit your husband, it won't come out. It's kind of like a hobby that turned into a small business, just small. In fact, I don't want to make any more brooms than I make. I just want to make brooms when I want.
Sounds of fireworks from this weekend's Oglesby Fest in Wheeling. And you can see a slideshow of images from that festival online at our new website, wvpublic.org. West Virginia Morning is a production of West Virginia Public Broadcasting, which is solely responsible for its content. Support for our news bureaus comes from Shepherd University, West Virginia University, Marshall University, and Concord University. Our producer is Beneduccio. Our director is Bob Powell. I'm Beth Voorhees.